Blog Talk Radio.
You think they really ready for you? Nah. You think that there'll be many of you? Nah. You really think?
Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic and all this. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see?
The man you're about to see in here, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4.
I got something, y'all, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing along. Lift every voice and sing, till I didn't ever ring. Ring with the harmony, oh, liberty. Let our rejoices rise high. Burning the time, loud as the Lord's sea.
Even superheroes gotta be healthy. Get the Sister Girl Workout Book, a graphic novel available this Black History Month at the DuSable Museum Trading Post gift shop located at 56 and Cottage Grove in Chicago. There you'll find our growing line of hot Black Age graphic novels, or visit Only Studios at www.onlistudios.com. Plus, get your own OnlyWears Art Star Denim Jacket. These one-of-a-kind special designs are available now at the Elephant Room Gallery at 703 South Wabash in Chicago. Only's wearable art brings out the art star in you. Indie today, Black Age forever at www.onlistudios.com.
Walking down the street now is a dangerous thing. There are drug dealers, crack houses, gang members, and crackheads. People fighting, cursing, and killing too. So much chaos, we don't know what to do. But if people only knew that they are hurting little children, if they could only see what our community could be. When in confrontation, 1, stay calm. 2, try to say something positive. 3, tell the person what's on your mind. 4, ask if the person understands. 5, thank the person for listening if you can. Come on, y'all. Let's be an example. It has to start somewhere. How about now? For more information on ways to prevent violent crimes, contact Totally Positive Productions at 773 888-9553.
What's going on, everybody? It's Talk to Me Tuesday. This is the Jimmy Lee Underground Radio Network. We're going to be dealing in a couple of subjects. War in Timbuktu. The Boy Scout lifting the gay ban. Sissy Houston, mama calling Whitney a heifer. I mean, that's tripped out. What we're going to be doing on that, got a couple of callers calling in. And we're going to take your calls also and see what you have to say on these topics today. Good evening, everybody. 347-838-985.
Your friendly announcer, I have serious news to pass on to everybody. What I'm about to say could mean the world's disaster, could change your joy and laughter to
breaking.
347-838-9825. That's what the world is in need of right now. The world is in need of love today, everybody. And a lot of things going on. A lot of things going on around the world. A lot of things going on in America, especially the Boy Scouts, Benghazi, Mogadishu, Africa. A lot of things going on. And I got a couple of callers calling in. It's going to help us discuss it. And I'm going to see if I got them on the line now. So while I'm trying to bring the callers in, let me go in and take it to another commercial break. And I should be back within 2 minutes, everybody.
Does your insurance company work for you? Hi, this is Ken Robinson, President and CEO of Ken Robinson & Associates Limited. We are an insurance brokerage firm located at 5963 West Madison Street, Chicago, Illinois. Our phone number is 773-626-0883. We make the insurance experience easier by shopping for you, saving you time and money. Our agency features the best insurance products, giving you the most competitive prices. We insure needs for less, featuring life, health, annuities, homeowners, auto, SR22, bond cards, business owners policies, general contractors liability, and vacant buildings. Now, we also offer coverages most major insurance companies no longer offer. Please call for a free quote at 773-626-0883.
Attention business owners, radio show producers, and internet radio producers. It's time to crank it up for 2012 with quality radio production. Are you a record label needing hot album promos or EPKs for your new artist? Introducing CoolVoiceRadio.com. Does your internet show need a new intro or outro? How about a promo for your upcoming event? Are you a DJ needing a hot voice for your next hot mixtape? Imagine increased sales in your business from an internet radio spot. We've got you covered with broadcast quality radio spot production with the nation's top voiceover talent, featuring talent like John Heath, Kate Clifford, Bill Thomas, and much, much more. Visit us online at www.coolvoiceradio.com. Coolvoiceradio.com or call 646-326-7800. Remember, nothing beats the right sound.
Hey, CC.
I ain't heard nothing about the fly in a long time, man.
Here's with the fly, brother. He just lays back, man, and he just checks the bug. Woo! Hear the cry. Woo! Is it a bird? Is it a plane? No, dude, it's the fly.
All right, man. All
right.
Fuck the ref, fuck what you saying, fuck your name, fuck your rep, fuck whatever you represent, your gang and your set, fuck the chips you claim you get, your chain on your neck, fuck your life and how you live, your wife and all your kids, nigga, fuck your block, fuck your street, fuck your crib, what you think you fucking with, you got beef, fuck it there, nigga, let's get it on, one on one, fuck my friends and fuck yours, I'm a true dog, nigga, I come through walls like fuck doors, keep my bitches butt naked like fuck drawers, bluff the nigga about to lock the D down like fuck tours, stay scrambling, I'm trying to get rich, cause fuck poor, fuck bitches, fuck boys, fuck tricking, I'm hungry as hell, a nigga starving, but I'm tired of fucking chicken, so fuck your sister, fuck your cousin, your mom's in your pot, fuck your pistol, supposed to do against the bombs that I drop, I'm from the under, steady screaming, fuck the ones up on top, ones up on the top, ones up on the motherfucking judges and politicians, fuck the world if it's the opposition, anybody that claim they want a competition, I'll stomp you fucking sisters, listen, shut the fuck up or get fucked up, fuck love, fuck affection, what, you gon' respect it, or we gon' stay fucking and bust love in your direction, fuck hugs, fuck that, fuck this and fuck that and fuck you. Nah, I'm just playing, but for real, fuck you, fuck work and fuck school, fuck rules and fuck laws, all y'all chicken head niggas can fuck off, got to stand by dumb shit y'all saw, or heard, fuck words, discussion and fuck talk, far left motherfucker, fuck whatever you thought and fuck whatever you bought, last time you was at the mall, I can go on, but I can sum this all up like fucking dog.
Lay back, baby, I'll catch you later.
Yeah,
Yeah, that was DJ Swift from the Troopers Lodge crew, and that is EFFEUU. And I guess that means FU. We got on the line from the Troopers, the group out of the motor, Professor James Miller, a.k.a. the Dawn of the Dead. I'll bring him in 1 second, but I'm going to play a couple of excerpts from today's news. And how do y'all, I want to talk to people out there with sons, just sons for a second. The Boy Scouts are reconsidering their ban on homosexuals serving in their ranks. Now, I would like to see what your opinion is on that. You know, me being a conservative, you know how I feel about certain things and certain issues, but all my liberal friends, my progressive friends, my Obama lovers, I want y'all to call me and let me know what y'all think about the situation. Sissy Houston, mother calling her a heifer. We might deal with that also today. And see how she's handling that. Sam Moore from Sam and Dave, he's going to weigh in on that also. Going to discuss how he tried to intervene. But the main topic we're going to be dealing with is what's going on in Timbuktu. You got documents being destroyed. You got the French government running in over it. It's a lot going on. But I'm going to bring it's a lot going on. And I want to get your opinions on those things also. I'm going to bring somebody in now. But let me go ahead and play a little excerpt. And we can go, my fault. Let me play a little excerpt of the news quote I got. Anything you want to run it, you can run it. Anything you feel like running it. Okay. You got it up? Okay. That it? Well, when it comes up, we're going to play it. Let me see if I can bring. Here it is right here.
To put in an iconic American institution, for generations, becoming a Boy Scout was an American tradition, but not for all. Today, the Boy Scouts of America signaled they are ready to drop their ban on gay scouts and scout leaders. And ABC's David Muir is here to tell us why this ban may finally be ending. David.
In fact, Diane, tonight, a spokesman for the Boy Scouts of America confirming to ABC News they are close to ending the ban on gays, scouts, and leaders, meaning early next week they could very well ban all national policy regarding sexual orientation.
For more than 100 years, the Boy Scouts of America have been shaping young minds. But tonight proved some of those young minds are now shaping the very leaders at the top. The Boy Scouts of America could soon lift the ban on gay scout leaders and gay scouts themselves. It would affect scouts like Brian Andresen from California, who started as a Cub Scout at 6, earning all 21 merit badges in his lifelong dream of becoming an Eagle Scout. But after those 21 badges were earned, the answer was no.
You've completed everything, you've done everything you're supposed to do, but they're saying they won't give it to you.
Yep, just because I'm gay.
Okay, and your mother then started a petition.
Yes.
I love mothers like that. Is your mother in the audience?
She's
good
right
for
there.
You.
His mom and dad with him on Ellen started a petition. Boy Scouts, don't let your anti-gay policy deny my son his Eagle Award. Late today, I asked Ryan's father what he makes of the Boy Scouts on the verge of major change.
The short answer is it's about time. You know, one of the points of the scout law is that you have to be honest and you have to be trustworthy, and these kids have not been allowed to do that.
Jennifer Terrell tells the story of her 7-year-old son, Cruz, who wanted to be a Cub Scout, so she became the den leader.
Before I knew it, I was living a life of merit badges and not.
But she says she was then fired, told her sexual orientation did not meet the high standards of conduct. It would be a distraction.
Well, I'm not a distraction. Alicia's not a distraction. We are moms, and we are Americans.
Her boy wiping away tears. But it's not just pressure from faces, families like this one. It's financial, too. Support from some of the Boy Scouts' biggest sponsors could be at stake if they don't change. But there is a divide in this country when it comes to allowing gay adults to be scout leaders. Look at Americans under 30. 60% say yes, they should be allowed. Americans older than 50, 39% say yes.
Tonight, one religious leader saying a change in policy, nothing less than disastrous for the Boy Scouts of America. A real divide. An announcement could come as early as next week, but even if national leaders decide to drop the ban, we heard something key today. A spokesman in a statement saying local chartered Boy Scout groups could still choose leaders, quote, consistent with their beliefs, and that parents would be able to choose a local unit that best meets their needs, Diane. A little bit of wiggle room there.
All right, but we were talking earlier about the Norman Rockwell painting, the classic painting, the Cub Scout dreaming one day of becoming a real Boy Scout, and you were saying the caption to that painting
can't
is...
Can't wait, right?
Can't wait.
What do you think about the cool? What do you think about the little call I just that's called extra that I just played? What's your take on that?
Well, I have to really think on that one. My whole take on the on the gays is really kind of like where our society has come to. We have and kind of not to really flip the script, but, you know, I'm an administrator in the school here in Detroit, and I was actually just kind of thinking about this as I was in school today, and I saw a lot of females, you know, coming to the school, picking up their child and whatnot, and a lot of them were, you know, had their hats to the back, hands sagging down, and these are the females. So it's kind of like, you know, in our society now that it's just a lot of confusion going on, a lot of identity crisis. And I was listening to someone the other day, and it's almost like, you know, based on, you know, television, the media, and a lot of other things that's going on nowadays that, I mean, our youth are growing up, and they're really highly confused. And not even getting to the point where, you know, the steroids and the chemicals that's in the food and the water, you know, it's a lot of other stuff that goes along with, you know, what's really going on with this, you know, homosexuality that's really even more widespread now. So to me, I'm not a fan of the Boy Scout anyway, but even though when I was growing up, I was in the Boy Scout, but that was a whole different day. But it's almost like if it's called Boy Scout, I mean, how can you be something other than that, belonging to an organization like that? So once again, going back to, you know, the society that we're living in, you know, it's almost like and it's something I heard a term a while back called the social engineers that we really don't see, you know, the unseen hand behind closed doors engineering the youth and the younger generation into accepting, you know, things about society that was unacceptable. And I'm not just, you know, gay bash or anything like that, but it's almost like population control. You know, over in China, they say, okay, you can't have more than two children. You know, the situation is going on over there. Over here, they don't really pretty much say that, but they have come up with other means to control the population. And I think that if this homosexuality situation is going on, it's part of it.
Yeah, I can disagree with you more. You know, me being conservative, you know, now everybody, and I put this like I talk to my white friends, everybody say that they got a gay friend or they got somebody gay in their family, so they will always come out saying, I don't want to bash homosexuals, but they throw that in there. You know me, I'm a kind of religious zealot, not an over-religious zealot, not like the Muslim Brotherhood or anything like that, but I strongly believe in my faith. And I feel that the Boy Scouts should be just that for the boys. If someone have an identity problem or a gender problem, or a man, I'm not saying a little boy, I don't feel that a man who will have some...
should be the head of the Boy Scouts.
Overall, boys. Now, if people want to sit there and say that they can probably control their urges and their desires, I would have them say, would you put a male over some Girl Scouts and have them go out there with the females? You know, would you find that inappropriate? Would you find it inappropriate for a male to be rearing females into a hoarding or hoarding females to a certain way? But that's how I look at it. Let me play one more clip and I'll be right back with you 1 second.
long enough about the Ebony, get it going, got it? Here we go.
Long-time ban on gay members and leaders.
I think it's big. I think it's significant because it says that nationally the mood of the country is changing, and I think this is just one more sign of it.
If approved, the policy would eliminate the ban from the national organization's rules, but would allow local sponsoring organizations to decide for themselves whether to allow gay scouts and scout leaders. In a written statement from the BSA, the policy change under discussion would allow the religious, civic, or educational organizations that oversee and deliver scouting to determine how to address the issue. Lifting the ban nationally would push the issue to the local level and still allow individual troops to ban gay members, saying that the Boy Scouts would not, under any circumstances, dictate a position to units, members, or parents.
I'd love to see everybody accepting of everybody. But, yes, it's a step in the right direction.
Don Scherfick is the vice president of Indiana Equality Action, a group that works for equality for LGBT Hoosiers.
I understand that there are lines that need to be drawn for First Amendment, freedom of religion connotations.
Several folks we spoke with see the positives, and others see the complications.
It's just a tough call because I've got my own beliefs about it and everything, and I don't know what to say. I think it's time they lifted that ban. There's plenty of good young men that could use scouting that shouldn't be turned away.
Well, that's the little take on it. I would run more, but I got a couple of callers coming in. Coop, let me bring you back in again.
Simmons.
Hold on.
I got a paycheck for Simmons.
Okay, let me stop that. You stop that.
It's your first of many.
No. Yeah. So what do you think about that? The news that's played for you.
Once again, it's like you just mentioned, just the whole spirituality or the soul, the essence of who we are, and the here, and from my understanding of what was just said, that okay, everybody be accepted of everything. Okay, then we have to think about the times that we're living in. If you accept everything, then going way back to what was said, this is hell that we're living in. If you accept everything and feel like nothing is wrong with anything, then where does that lead us as a society, as a group of people, humanity and so forth? If you just say, okay, well, if you want to be this, you can be this. And then, where do you draw the line? So it's almost like, I guess how you mentioned it, would you take a male to say, okay, well, I'm going to be the head of the Girl Scout and teach these young ladies how to be, I don't know everything that goes into the Girl Scout, but a male saying, I'm going to teach these young ladies how to become a better woman, a better female. That takes a female to do that. And then the same thing for a male. And so it's almost like then, like going back to, like I said, we have social engineers that's using, the media and rap music and a lot of other things to be like, this is socially accepted. And not to really flip the script, but recently I just saw a video about this one cat, this Trinidad James cat or whatever. And I saw this man wearing some, I don't know what kind of shoes, but no socks, with holding a puppy dog. Now, how is this manly? So it's almost like there's certain symbolism that's in certain things, along with a lot of other stuff that they're doing in society that's making it socially accepted. And it's almost like, where are we going as a society where we continue to say, oh, okay, just love everyone. So then we'll go and read, some people will read in the Bible or whatever else that said, okay, when the Creator said, okay, well, I'm going to come back and destroy the world. The Creator doesn't love everything, so why do we feel that we have to love everything? So once again, it's like, okay, well, how can you really teach certain, the youth, or teach certain morals and values when you just accept, certain things of what it is? And I was, showing my students, we were talking about Malcolm X today as I was watching the Malcolm X movie with my students. It's almost like people in the past, they stood up for certain things. They didn't just, now I can't say everyone, but just certain things, that aspects of, you know, the 60s and going back, they stood up for things. They didn't just accept everything that was given to them. And it's like now we have become a society where we just accept anything. It's like, oh, it's okay. You know, when you think about a rapper or somebody who's making money, oh, it's okay, he's making money, you know. Or, you know, once again, going to the homosexuality, oh, it's okay, he's this or she's that. And like I said earlier today, when I was looking at some of these women coming into my school and with their hats to the back and so forth, so it's almost like that's not even really what a male should really do. So some females are acting like the stereotype of what a man should be, and then certain men that are gay and so forth are acting like the stereotype of what a female should be. Like certain females don't even act like that. Like they over exaggerate that. And it's like, okay, what female really acts like that? The same thing for a male. Like when we see a man sagging his pants or doing certain things, we know that that's still wrong. So now we have females that want to become men, and they just do that same thing and thinking like we should accept that from them as well. And it's like, I think that's wrong. Hello?
My fault, sorry about that. I'm sorry, dead air again. I was talking, had the mic on mute. I got my man Ron Carter on hold. I'm going to bring him in a minute, Professor. I'm going to take a little break. I got my man Desert Storm holding on also. I'm going to bring him in from Cleveland, and we're going to deal more with the Boy Scout situation. But I really want to talk about what's going on in Timbuktu with the French troops over there. Did Hillary Clinton get us in this mess? She got us in Libya already. Now we're over there in Mali, and there's a lot of stuff being destroyed in Timbuktu. I really want to on that, but I'm going to take a break. Come back with my callers. Don't go nowhere. This is Jimmy's Underground Radio Network. Talk to me Tuesday, 347-838-9825. Be back within 2 minutes.
And now, the mellow sounds of Jimmy Earl.
Never meant to make you cry. You were the only one I've ever loved in my life, and so it's hard for me to show it. I've got to let you know it, 'cause darling, I love you more each day. But the word got in my
can't do it no more. I can't sing no more sad songs. 1, 2, 3, hit me. Bop, bop, bop it out of bebop. Bop, bop, yeah, bass man. Come on up. 1, 2, 3, hit me. Sound good. Yeah, saxophone on the floor. 1, 2, 3, hit it.
Take back his sign. I gotta do something to shake things up. I like Johnny Mathis, but
can't do that stuff. Jimmy got soul, Jimmy got soul, Jimmy got S-O-U-L, soul. I can't do rock, I can't do roll. What I can do, baby, is show my soul. Jimmy got soul, Jimmy got soul, Jimmy got, Jimmy got, Jimmy got soul.
347-838-9825. Hold on, Dane. I got you on hold. I'm about to run this.
Turn down, Jim.
I got Dana from D.C. I got my man Sean from Cleveland and my man from Detroit. Let me go to Chicago to Professor Ron Carter, who's on the base. How you doing, this? This is Ron Carter, Sonya Perdue. What's going on, Mr. Perdue? What's going on, Mr. Perdue? How you doing, Sonya?
I'm doing fine, Jimmy. How are you?
I'm fine. I got some information
you caught me off guard there. I was listening.
Oh, my phone. I'm sorry. I'll be trying to get them all in. You know, I always got so much short time, and our phones sometimes over here, our lines sometimes be blowing up, and I try to get everybody, you know, try to get everybody in, so you know how we do it. So I hear the South Street Journal is branching out to the South Suburbs now.
Yes, it is. I'm going to leave that to the publisher and editor of the South Street Journal, Ron Carter, when he comes on. He can, you know, get into that. But, yeah, we have branched out to the South Suburbs, and we are online now. So you can read read the South Street Journal online at issuu.com/South Street Journal. It looks good, too, Jimmy. It looks very, very good. The South Suburbs, they are just overwhelmed and excited about it being out there in the South Suburbs. The feedback is just been absolutely great.
Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to wait till Brother Ron Carter come back on, and I'm going to go ahead and keep on going because I want him to come out and talk to our listeners. You see, this is Sonya Perdue from Black Wall Street. They kind of assisted a black man and helped me start my little radio show, everybody out there who's listening to the network.
You still going, too.
So campaign
still
also.
Going.
Yeah, we still going. We still going strong. And we got a big listenership. We got a big ship. Matter of fact, if you're not doing nothing Saturday, and my listeners not doing nothing Saturday because they follow us very well, we're going to have Saturday on Coffee, Tea, and Conversation with me. We're going to have Dr. Claude Anderson also. Make sure to tune in for that. So let me go ahead and bring my other callers in. I'm going to come back to you all in 1 second, and Ron Carter should be on there and tell everybody what's going on. All right, Mr. Perdue, that's cool?
Thank you so much, Jimmy.
Problem at all. I'll put you on hold right there. Let me go and bring my man Sean in from Cleveland. What's going on, Desert Storm from Cleveland? What it do?
Hey, what's going on with you, man? I hear a little topic tonight, man. I kind of lost my train of thought for being on hold for so long, but
we tried to get you in the yellow room, but, you know, we hurt your computer, but we couldn't get you on. I'm dealing with that little Boy Scout stuff, but I really want to touch on this Timbuktu and Mom Molly, what's going on over there. You been brushing up on that? You familiar with that, what's happening over there?
I just read a little bit of it, but ain't Timbuktu the center of knowledge or what or something like that?
You know, education, and a lot of things are going on over there. As a matter of fact, let me play a little clip from This is yesterday. Malayan woke up French troops in Timbuktu. This is a little spot. The Malayans are happy that the French are now in their country, assisting. I guess the overthrow of the quote unquote Al Qaeda. I don't know. I don't feel that America should be in there first of all, and I don't think we should be assisting the French troops in their conquest of Africa. Because I don't think France even did anything for us while we was in Desert Storm whatsoever. So this little thing, everybody want to clap their hands and celebrate Hillary Clinton, all this stuff. I just don't understand it because I feel that she personally herself is in charge of this debacle, that we got going on in the areas. And as soon as I get this uploaded, I'm going to play it right now for you. And I got my man Coop from the Coop's holding on also. Let me go. Here we go.
The population of Timbuktu is mixed. As news of the convoy spreads, people come out in larger numbers to greet it. The population of Timbuktu is mixed, but we don't see any Arabs or Tuareg among the crowd celebrating. Nevertheless, the Malian soldiers say their aim is to reunite the country. The French say they've now fulfilled the first two steps of their mission, stopping the rebel offensive and recapturing towns that the rebels have taken.
That's just one. Hold tight here, but I'm gonna get two more. I thought that was a little bit longer. That's a short version. Let me play the long version.
Tell me what they talk about.
I'm trying to get to it now. I thought I had that one. I thought that was a version talking about it. That was just a little short version telling that they everybody celebrate. But what's going on now is that you got quote unquote Al Qaeda like fractions in Mali. Now this came from when we went over there and got rid of Libya, Muammar Gaddafi. Now, a bunch of weapons got free and are filtrating all over Africa, Mogadishu, Yemen, and all those other places. And now, you know how I feel on the president thus far, Sean. I felt that he's a president because of Africa's always in play. And I was saying, now this is going on. Now we're in the second term. This is what's happening. Let me play a little bit more of it right here, and we can go from there and bring everybody back in. Oh, it's pausing up.
French troops secure their hold on Timbuktu Airport and the surrounding area. They captured the airport late on Sunday with Malian government soldiers. At the same time, French paratroopers were landing to the north of the city. These exclusive Al Jazeera pictures show rebel fighters leaving their bases in Timbuktu. They say they're regrouping rather than fleeing. French forces have set up checkpoints around the city to try to catch them. A deputy mayor of Timbuktu visits the airport. I ask him whether there's a risk of Malian troops carrying out reprisals.
The Malian troops, I have faith in them, because the Malian troops are Malians themselves. On the contrary, I would say there is not any risk.
The order comes to move into the center of Timbuktu. The French say they haven't entirely secured the city yet. Malian troops are leading this convoy into Timbuktu, but appearances can be deceptive. It's the French who are reinstalling the government troops here, and they'll continue to carry out joint patrols with them for some time to come. As news of the convoy spreads, people come out in larger numbers to greet it. The population of Timbuktu is mixed, but we don't see any Arabs or Tuareg among the crowd celebrating. Nevertheless, the Malian soldiers say their aim is to reunite the country.
We feel good in Timbuktu. We feel at home. We will make sacrifices to protect the territorial integrity of Mali. That's what we are here for. That's what we will do.
The French say they've now fulfilled the first two steps of their mission, stopping the rebel offensive and recapturing towns that the rebels have taken. The final step, securing the vast northern desert and preventing the rebels from returning, will fall to the joint African force. And this step will be the hardest. Jackie Rowland, Al Jazeera, Timbuktu.
Now, I got that from Al Jazeera. Well, that's what the news of today. What has happened is the Malian rebels have taken over all of Mali, you know, and it's funny. You know what's funny? I'm saying it's funny because what's the big drug out in the street? What's the big drug? Are they popping Mollies over there in Cleveland? Are they popping Mollies in Cleveland? Because it's funny. No. You got Mali popping Mollies all around all the rap stuff. And here we got the Malians. See, it's really hard to say. You know, it's really hard to say which side that you can be on. But you know how Pat African, let me bring Cooper in here. I lost the 770. Next time you're on. Let me bring Cooper in here. Now, you from back in the day, the Pan-Africanism that should be the Pan-Africanism that should be running around all in the black communities. Free Africa from colonists. Get all the colonies out of Africa, and let Africans dictate their own destiny. That cry was real big back in the 90s. Do you remember that? Does it still remember that?
Yeah, I remember.
I mean, where is it now? Where is it now? Where are the people now screaming, get out of Africa? You know, see, like I always, which was my fear, See, we have a black president, and everybody has gotten quiet and silent. And I've always said he is our president, because the new frontier is the old frontier, which is Africa. Now, we're right back in Africa. We've been dropping drones in Yemen. We've been, ever since Black Hawk Down, we avenged the Battle of Mogadishu. We deep in Libya. We all Egypt. I mean, we are in the Horn of Africa so deep, and not one Pan-Africanist is screaming, stop, wait. I mean, you're killing innocent Africans with your drone attacks. That's what's going on right there in Mali. I mean, so what's your take? I mean, anybody, any caller, you got to see if Danny's in, bring Danny's not.
Why is Timbuktu so important, man? Why is it so important?
It's always been important.
Well, tell me why it's important, because that explains why them troops are there, those foreign troops are there.
Well, it's the
I said something
that
used to be this ancient center of learning, right? It got some historical things there, right?
Well, right now, I'm hearing those historical things are being destroyed right now as we speak. What I'm saying is this, the Malayan rebels right now still got half the country. Timbuktu was a great victory for the French government.
Oh, for the French government. Well, you know, it's natural resources over there. Ain't no natural resources in Europe, all right? So they got to get to the country that has the most. And Africa got the most, especially that China's over there getting oil. So we got to have an excuse to get back into that country. That make any sense?
Well, we got the excuse when we went over there and got rid of Gaddafi.
No. That's the Arab occupied part. All right, that's the Arab occupied part. That's not the black occupied. Timbuktu is in the black part, right?
I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm saying all this destabilization has come from the destabilization of Libya. You see, now I'm not gonna sit here on Blog Talk Radio and pump up Muammar Gaddafi. I'm not gonna sit there and say he was a great guy. I'm not gonna be out there like that. But you know,
damn them Arabs, man. They just like the Jews. They occupied Africa. They need to go back to the Middle East where they from. Okay? Africa belong to black people. Or Egypt also. Hello?
Listen.
You there?
Listen, I have no argument with you. But I'm saying as an American that, you know, as an American, what should we do? Well, I mean, what should we do? I mean, listen, now you can admit to them that saying that Timbuktu is a cradle of civilization, but there's war right there. There's war in Timbuktu. There's war, all ancient scrolls and knowledges can be alleviated. That's Timbuktu right there. That's war in Timbuktu. I mean, blacks right now should be like, hold on. I mean, there was a lot of Christians upset when we was going in Baghdad because we wanted none of the religious icons to be destroyed. There was Buddhists going mad when the Taliban destroyed some big temples of Buddha over there in Afghanistan. Right now, people are on edge in Egypt because the Muslim Brothers are about to destroy the pyramids. So what I'm saying is I'm sorry, go ahead, caller. Cool. What you say now?
No, so you're saying, okay, so the Timbuktu destroying the ancient knowledge. And your whole thing is where the Pan-Africans, like, why we're not saying, okay, hold on, this is where.
Where are
they?
I heard them.
And so since we have the black president, then we pass us, basically.
Yes, basically I'm feeling that.
I mean, we pass us anyway, man. Go ahead.
I'm feeling that with the emergence of black rulership or black leadership, because I'm still going to tell you after Obama we are going to have another African-American president because our presence in Africa are going to have to be strong because, you see, this is what I feel. No one is saying anything about American involvement in Africa because a black man is running it. Nobody want to see Sarkozy over there in Africa. Nobody want to see Ban Ki-moon over there in Africa. Nobody want to see none of these people over there. So we can send a drone over there and accidentally kill some Africans trying to get Al Qaeda, man. Because we're not gonna put no boots on the ground. We don't get caught in no quagmire. Algeria. What if French get caught out? Algeria, not Algeria. Was it? Where did Fritz get bogged down in last time? I don't want to see no American soldiers over there shooting at no black people with. I just can't see that. The optics for anybody that's African or Pan-African, to see the image of a soldier killing an African, whether it's Al-Qaeda.
Tell me, what about those Africans you see over there with the hacksaws hacking people up? You wouldn't rather see an American soldier put him out of his misery? One hacking children up with them machetes?
Because
they're doing that still over there.
I mean, that's not our benefit. To me, that's not, unless our resources are in jeopardy, why should we care? It's not our fight. And I ain't our business.
Well,
it's like what's going on.
Like Rwanda, you know it's out of control over there, man. It's very out of control, really out of control.
I agree. It's out of control over there. And you know how many wars we are in right now over there that we ain't talking about over there? America. With boots on the ground.
Yeah, we got boots on the ground
now,
chasing down black generals or something like that. I remember reading a few months ago. Yeah, we got special forces over there. Special forces over there.
On the ground
now,
but see, these are things we're not talking about. We're still looking at what? Afghanistan, which is drawing down. We're still looking at Iraq, which is drawing down. But the military industrial complex, no, it's always been about Africa. Bill Clinton couldn't pull the trigger. He'd go over there. We lost one helicopter, Black Hawk down. We got to get out of there because Bill Clinton knew the optics. Bill Clinton knew a white American cannot be over there shooting at skinny black people. You know, and let's look at the average age of an African citizen, of an African warrior. What, 14? 13?
Yeah.
13 years old? I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I just want to know, where are the people?
They got older, Jimmy. They got older.
Oh, so passionately just 5 years ago. Just 5 years ago. You know, stop colonizing Africa. We got to go. Let's go over there and stop the war crimes in Somalia. Let's go over there and just stop these warlords. I mean, where are they now? They're not even, no, not a pipe, not even a peep. Not even nothing been said. And now here we have Timbuktu. I mean, come on. We all know about Timbuktu because the old head told us about Timbuktu. All these old black Pan-Africans told us about Timbuktu. But not one black radio station, not one black article, not one black media, no Ebby, no Jet, no defending, one person is saying that Timbuktu is being threatened. Period.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on and bring Dana in this call for a second. What's up, Dana from D.C.? What you got, Dana? I'm sorry, I had you on hold. You want to chime in? Well, let me put Dana back on. She got her phone on mute.
Listening.
There you go.
I don't have a comment. I'm just listening.
All right, yeah, I got you. Back in. Hold on one second. I'm putting all y'all back in the blue room. Let me see if I got my man, Mr. Ron Carter. He's in the media outlet. If I can bring them on and see have they been covering or what's going on with the South Street Journal. Sonya, if you do, I'm sorry. Sonya, am I fronting on you?
Yeah, you back on me right now, Jimmy. Go ahead to her.
Okay. What's your take on what I just spilled out here, what was going on in Timbuktu with this little mini war that nobody in black America seems to care about?
And I hate to be one of those black Americans. You know, Jimmy, I do not own a TV. I don't look at TV. I don't look at I'm into me too much and what I can control. I do empathize as much as I can with what you're saying and what's going on. There's probably so many complexities to it and so many layers to it as to what's going on, and it's not isolated there. It is all over the world. People taking over people killing people because they resources and any other reason that they can think of. And are complacent. They can do it because we're complacent. And am I included in that? Yes, it is. They can put gays in the Boy Scout and gay Boy Scout leaders over them, and they can kill people in Timbuktu because basically, and if I'm one of them, I feel real bad about it right at this point, then That's how they can do those things and can continue to do it, and nothing will be done about it. That's how I see it, Jimmy.
Yeah, but, you know, this is my complaint, Sonia. My only complaint is that nobody cares. You see, I'm saying this, that we have a black, you know, it could be me sitting on my Republican chair and saying, what's wrong with these black lady Democrats over here? Are we so happy because we feel we reached the mountaintop that we can't look at anything else no more? Or when Obama leaves, let me bring everybody out there. When Obama leaves, Cleveland, when Obama
leaves.
Let me ask you this,
Jimmy. Do people really care about the murder rate in Chicago? Do they really, really care? Because when people really, really care about something, they change things.
That she made a lot of sense, man.
Your car drops on you, and people.
So my thing is too. You know, it's almost like we've gotten to the point where you know, and you said what now?
Go ahead.
No, that was me.
No, okay, so I'm saying that, I mean, it's so much this out there, and people are concerned about, or it's almost like they want, it's something that I was reading a while back on how if we continue to be on the government, the white man, or whoever's agenda, then we get off our own agenda. You know, if we really need to get back on our agenda, have our own agenda, and what we really want to, you know, change in our communities and in the world, and sometimes stop focusing on them. Even though I know we are, you know, so-called Americans, even though I don't really consider myself that. Even when I don't like to even say the whole point, like, we went over there. I didn't go over to Libya or to the Middle East. That's the American troops that went over there. I don't support any of that at all. So it's almost like when we get off their agenda, and then it's almost like maybe some of that will cease to be important, and maybe we can change when we come in with our own agenda. Even going to Obama, whoever else, and say this is the agenda that we want. And until we really get back to that, it's almost like that they're going to continue to do certain things, and then they're going to put the distractions out there that get certain people away from, you know, the real issues. Because like I, you know, the 2012 just ended. A lot of murders were in Chicago that I read, and a lot of murders were in Detroit, where I am right now. And, you know, even the situation with the Sandy Hook, and even though that's a whole situation, too. So you get a president going to cry over 20 children that died in one day. How about 400 children just about that died in a year? So, you know, it's a lot of other things that play into, you know, what's going on right now.
You going with Sean?
Yeah, I'm here.
I mean, I thought you were going to comment. I don't want to talk of your comment role like that, but Purdue, if you out there, your car dropped. Listen, I'm looking at like people are numb and shy over violence. We cry. Matter of fact, somebody got popped just around the corner of my crib, you know, just today. And this little girl just got shot, come home from school in the chest, 50 years old. She just died today. You see?
How old?
I mean, you see.
How old was she?
15 year old girl.
Do you think you need boots on the ground in Chicago?
Well, see, we got don't take me to no conspiracy theories with our Jewish mayor who might want to try some things in here, because, you know, let's not try to do that. Matter of fact, let me bring my man from Missouri here, Pianki. Hey, Pianki, what's going on? When you weigh in on the topic, man, I'm trying to find out why, you know, what's going on in Timbuktu. Anybody care about Timbuktu? You know, anything else? Just any.
Well, I was going to ask that one brother. Who's left in Detroit to kill? I thought everybody done left out of there.
it's still a lot. It's getting to the point where, just like Jimmy said, I mean, people are numb to it. But, you know, that's my whole point again, you know, setting our own agenda. It's pretty sad when you have 300 or more, just about 400 murders in a year. And, you know, people are kind of numb to it, and I'm not always waiting on the media to bring it up anyway, because that's the whole point, and I'm saying that we're waiting on them to, even Jimmy saying, okay, why is anybody speaking them on it? I mean, everything that goes on, man, it'll always be in the media. I mean, that's there. They control that part, you know, and they put out what they want to put out. You know, blog, radio, we can maybe control this, But so we're talking about it right now, you know, to make a
yeah,
you know,
I know.
Difference, to make a change.
But you know, the thing is, if that's going to change, blacks going to have to change that themselves, because others are not going to come in and change that. That is the repercussions of many, many decades of ill government, so on and so on and so on. And Jimmy, you know, you made the comment about Timbuktu or Mali. That's the offshoot of what went on in Libya. And now what you see is France. France is trying to position itself also in Libya and now going down into Mali to open up doors for French companies to be able to sell those needed resources that China and India want. But, you know, a thing that's more devastating, well, it's all bad, but another thing that's real devastating that the French have been doing since the late 1940s is that CFA pact. The CFA is the currency that the former French colonies used, and they control that. And the way they go about doing it, out of every dollar, 65 cents is required to be deposited in the French treasury. Another 20% or 20 cents is used to pay for liability. In other words, you're paying for your own insurance of the money that you're putting in somebody. It's similar like what they was talking about doing here some years ago, where they said that FDIC, that the depositors themselves would have to pay for the insurance when they put money in the bank. And just that alone only leave those countries with only 15 cents out of every dollar to operate. And if you ever look at a map how those countries, those French former colonies are situated compared to the English colonies, countries, you got a French, for instance, in Cote d'Ivoire, then you got a Ghana, then you got a Togo, then a Benin, you got a Nigeria, which is English, a Benin, which is French. On the other side of Nigeria, you got Cameroon, which is French. Ghana, you got one side of Ghana is Benin. The other side of Ghana is Togo. So you got them situated like that. Now, if the countries around you cannot efficiently run and operate themselves, how do you expect that you ever going to get up to your greatest potential?
Yeah, I agree. And it is an offshoot of Libya, you know. Hold on. Yeah, it is offshore of Libya. And I feel that we just shouldn't be in there. Now, Bianchi, what's your take on, do you think this has to do something with Hillary Clinton? Do you think it's all
Hillary Clinton, Susan Rice, and Samantha Powers. I call them the three wicked witches from the West. You remember they were the ones that coerced Obama to get involved with Libya. Susan Rice was hollering about, oh, we can't have another Rwanda. And that's how that began. Obama began assisting the French with bombing Libya, offering them money. The rebels that was coming into Benghazi, those are the same rebels that were fighting against U.S. soldiers in Iraq. This thing with the Ambassador Stevens, if you look in the news for today, they're talking about that in Syria, the Syrian president, al-Assad, and the Syrian people themselves are beginning to turn the tide on the rebels, especially in the north. Well, the reason why that is because Ambassador Stevens, who was helping to provide the rebels with arms and munitions, he got killed in Benghazi, remember?
Right, right. And now you got everybody, come on back home. You know, don't go to Jordan. Bring it back home because ain't nothing happening. And now you got, you know, Iran shooting up monkeys and out of space. You know? I mean, and all this is happening. Hillary Clinton's watching. She's always been the liveest Secretary of State that we ever had. And we've been in so much trouble worldwide right now that we're laughing stock, a whole joke. And I'm just amazed, you know, I hope I ain't beating a dead horse, of that all these pro-black, you know, and I'm pro-black. I was pan-African, as you know, back to Africa, all that movement, that NAMM1 people, they meet every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. How are we going to do this? We got to be black, black, black to Africa. But now one person even know the atrocities that are taking place in Timbuktu right now. I mean, we can lose so much history within a blink of an eye, and no one would even realize that it was taken from us or gone. People didn't believe Timbuktu even is a real place. You know what I'm saying? People didn't think Timbuktu is for real. And that's what happened.
Them Islamists. Go ahead, sir.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, real quick, those Islamists are supported by the Western powers. And here's the and first it started off with the Tuaregs. Tuaregs want to have their own state. Tuaregs consider their land to stretch from Algeria all the way over to Burkina Faso. And that's been going on for a long time. And the Tuaregs wanted to have northern Mali to become their own state. And the Malian army was trying to fight them, and they was bitching because they didn't have the equipment to do so. Well, here's the point. If the United States or France was so interested in stopping these Islamists, and why come they just didn't equip the Malian army with the what they needed in order to wage a good battle, rather than expending their own money, their own soldiers, and, you know, so on and so on and so on. No, it's just another one of them scams.
It's an excuse. Europeans need an excuse to get back in Africa. That's why.
And they back, and no one has said nothing. That's the point I'm saying. And this is why.
That's because Africa in chaos, man.
Ooh. Listen, Mark, we're going to, after Obama's time, we're going to get at least 4 more years of African American rule. Where there's Condi Colin, there's going to be another African American, because it's the only way that we can maintain this dead of silence. It's the only way we can maintain the native descendant of slaves in Africa from being quiet. This is the only way you can go to Africa, because a European cannot go to Africa and conquer. That's why the Asians are having a better time than the French. Asians have been down. China almost owns half Africa. They go down there, they partner up with the country, pay their roads, give them hospitals. I mean, it's ways of handling things and dealing with stuff right there. Let me bring my girl, Miss Purdue, Sonya Purdue, back in one more time. I got her on hold for a second. I see Mr. Ron Carter to check in. I'm gonna bring him back in as it's half an hour. This is right here, Purdue, right here. Yeah, okay, Mr. Purdue. Yeah, drop your call in the middle of your statement you was making. Yeah, you lost your call. You were saying something.
That's fine, Jimmy. And I think the young man was picking up on it, you know. And it's just taking care of home first. It does affect us in the long term. But if we're not taking care of, you know, what's going on right here, we just have so much outreach. I mean, you expected, you're speaking about the Pan-Africans, and, you know, we just have so much energy that we can extend to different things. And if we don't take care of home, then everything else around us, it's not irrelevant, but it's nothing that we could do about that. And we're not taking care of home. We're failing on our own jobs, in our homes, in our city, in our towns right here. So if we're failing there, when we start, you know, we talked about this before, do Black Americans even have a place in the international scheme of things? We have no voice, we have no place, we have no representation, and we don't really have any knowledge of it. Rarely are we talking about international issues or in discussion about them.
Right, I agree, and that's what I feel
not
that.
Saying, I'm not speaking in absolutes, but I would say the majority of it, you know. Ron has been in the media over 20 years. You want to have a, you know, discussion about maybe local affairs and international affairs, he would probably be the most versed person here. But I think if we don't deal with the situation in which we don't. How long they been wearing their pants off their butt? 20 years now? It seems like it to me. You would thought it would have passed by now.
Oh, I see some people 65 wearing their pants off their butt. So that'd be longer than that.
Oh, it's been longer than that. I don't know.
They see now. They forgot to.
You think they 65? I don't know.
Wearing hip hop clothes now, I'm telling you.
Well, yeah, it's true. They still got teenager mentality.
It's the Viagra.
It's
the Viagra.
Just more than just. Lord nature.
Oh.
But you know, I hear what you say, ma'am. But no, black, how African Americans should get involved on the international scene is through economics and through business. There's a lot of business opportunity, and you know, and by the way, there's a lot of African Americans that is doing business on the international scene, but it's just not that many. And you have to get out there.
Are small, yeah, the percentages are small. But sir, when we talk about what we should be doing, one of the should be doing is start with the basics first. And what we should be doing is seeing that there's a higher than 50% failure rate in our high schools. And so then they'll be able to discuss international affairs. They can have difficulty discussing that as adults if they can't read. So there's basic fundamental things that need to be done first.
You have businesses that do have the capability of doing that, doing business on the international.
Percentages are too low for 30 million black Americans. Percentages of everything that we're doing is just too low for 30 million black Americans, except for the murder rate.
You're right, but there needs to be more people doing business. That way you can control them dollars that's leaving your community.
First, they must be able to read, write, do arithmetic.
But if they have 50% failure rate
in high schools, we're not building business leaders. We're building fools and prisons.
Well, what I'm saying is that you have businesses that can be steered in that particular direction. Now look at the Chicago, y'all in Chicago, who provides the food for the lunches in the Chicago public schools? So you have either Sodexo or Aramac. Aramac is British and Sodexo is France. So you have blacks that's capable of taking on that endeavor that's already in business in those particular lines of food supply.
Why aren't they?
Because they're not being encouraged, in some cases coerced, that this is something that needs to be done.
Sometimes they cannot bid in those contracts. These companies outbid them in those contracts. They cannot afford to supply the schools with those particular things. It's not cost effective for them to do it. These large corporations can do that.
Well, your school districts would have to say that this is the way it's going to be.
Well, black people don't get involved in international affairs.
Well, they have difficulty in building basic contracts
in Chicago
because they outbid them. It's a lot of things that can be done, but there's a lot of forces against us besides just us having the ability. The ability might be there to do it, but not having the capital to do it will stop us. We can't even invest locally in what we're doing. Because we are outgunned and outnumbered financially.
I think sometimes that we have, and this can be just, I'm not even going to say far-fetched, but I think we're really relying too much on the physical part of this world that the white man has created, and not really getting back to really who we really are as black people, you know, magical, that spiritual, that soul, that collective consciousness that we are really, you know, getting away with. I mean, we've had money. We've almost tried almost everything. I'm not going to say everything, but we've tried a lot being in this country for the last 400 or something years and over the last 50 years with the so-called civil rights movement, so on and so forth. And it's almost like none of it has worked. You know, and one thing that we still really haven't tried is collective consciousness and we all being on one accord, because the money and all of that, that's playing on the white man's realm. You know that,
but that's a fairy tale illusion too, brother. What you're talking about—that's an illusion, man.
It has, I mean, that's
a nice dream and thought, but that's not reality.
It works, and it works for some people. Jimmy, when you gonna bring Ron on? It works for us, but it doesn't work for everybody. And sometimes you have to leave some people behind.
Exactly. But why would it be an illusion? Like, why would you say that?
Because it's been tried, man. We have too many things pulling us. We have religions telling us don't do this. And we have other groups that say, hey, don't do that. Don't associate with them because they see things this way. We got too many devices pulling us apart from each other. So that's an illusion, man. That won't ever happen. It's about just being an individual. And also, like you said, don't be trying to beg the government. I hear the sister over there talking about we need to beg the government.
Okay, I'm about to bring Dana in, and then I'm gonna bring my man Mr. Ron Carter in from Black Wall Street. We're gonna see what's going on there and get his opinion. What'd you guys say, Dana?
Well, part of the problem is. Part of the problem is that we don't realize, or we act like we don't realize, that before you can try to build a country, you need to start with building a town. We try to overcome and accomplish, and you know what I mean, and take care of everything at one time, when it's impossible, because there's too many forces dividing every situation. And so when you have, you know, that's the reason why all these other problems work throughout society. Slavery, that's the reason why it works. You divide and you conquer. If we can't come together on the small stuff, then we definitely can't come together on the big stuff. If you look into these neighborhoods, you know, we're killing each other. So how do we deal with something global when we can't even deal with what's going on in our backyard first?
We can't even deal locally, right?
Right. So when you're trying to build a country and you haven't even successfully built up the town, then guess what? Then everything fails.
We got to learn how to control our background noise, too.
That's what I'm talking about. See, that's the town, Bianchi. That's the town. Hi, everybody.
I can't agree with her. It's very, very difficult when your resources, what little resources you have, are pulled in so many different directions. If we come to a reality, and maybe it's just my reality, as Black Americans, that we really own nothing by comparison to what white America owns. We own nothing. When I come in from the Brown Line down to the South Side, to the north side, from the north side on the Brown Line, I almost cry every time I look at downtown. We own nothing, and we need to recognize and realize that we have nothing by comparison to white America.
Okay, Sonya, I'm going to let that be the last word for this quick break. I got Sonya Perdue from Chicago, Ron Carter, Chi-Town holding on. I got my man Pianti from Kansas City, Missouri, Dana from D.C., Professor Miller from Detroit, and Desert Storm from Cleveland. Be right back in 3 minutes, everybody.
Superman was killed in Dallas. There is no love left in the palace. Someone took the Beatles' lead guitar. Have another Chevy's Regal. You're 12 years old and sex is legal. Your parents don't know where or who you are. Used to be the hero of the ball game. Took the time to shake the loser's hand. Used to be that failure only meant you didn't try. In a world where people gave a damn. Great big wars in little places. Look at all those frightened faces. But don't come here, we just don't have the room. Love thy neighbor's wife and daughter. Cleanse your life with holy water. We don't need to bathe. We've got a few. Used to be a knight in shining armor. Didn't have to own a shiny car. Dignity and courage were the measure of a man. Lots of drugs he needs to hide the scars. Whoa, 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 whoa. Can you teach your read? Don't you preach your pray? Don't you present?
What the hell? They're too young to feel pain. Oh, but I believe that love can save tomorrow.
Ooh, I believe the truth can make us free. Someone tried to say it, and we nailed him to a cross. I guess it's still the way it used to be.
I got my man, Mr. Ron Carter, on the bass. Mr. Ron Carter from Black Wall Street. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing pretty good, Jimmy. It's been a long time. I'm glad to be back on your program, and definitely was into the conversation prior to me coming on. But I'm doing great, you know. Still out here pushing the agenda of Black Wall Street and South Street Journal.
Right, I have no problem having you on my show because you was one of the few media that gave me a chance while I was running for Congress to get a chance to get my voice out there and gave me the idea to use this media to keep my voice out there so everybody can see what Jimmy Lee really feels. And last time I talked to you, I told your boy Jesse was going to jail, didn't I tell you that? He's going to blow up all Black Chicago. Now we have no leadership here. Didn't I tell you that? Where we at now, Mr. Ron Carter?
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. I think it's you know, a shame that the voters of the second district, there has been analysis of why he was still elected under that cloud that was over him. I don't know if it was his strong, invisible army that got him elected, or the people were afraid of change. But it does says that the second district voters did the district a disservice, knowing such a cloud was under the congressman like that. So it really wasn't no surprise to the voters, but it's still a mystery why the voters still voted an invisible candidate in office.
Yeah, not only did they do the second district a dissatisfaction, they made all Black folks look stupid, didn't they? We all embarrassed the whole America,
yeah,
looking at us like we stupid, like we just follow the leader. You see,
yeah, I did write an editorial explaining the unrationale of the voters of the second district, and now it's a cost factor to even to have another election, so they cost themselves as taxpayers by not being astute with that cloud and not even calling the question. You did call the question. You did say it. There was other candidates that pointed to it. I don't know if it's the lack of accepting.
Ron, they was all afraid of the powerful Jesse Jackson movement. Now, you know, when he made a move on the Tillmans, you know, that shook everybody up like, oh. So everybody went running to this man. I said, nah, Ron, he's going to fall. This dude about to take down Black Chicago, because what we have here in Black Chicago and Black leadership is remnants of Jesse Jackson Jr. Now, check it out. Now, this man been wearing a wire. He put everybody in office. You know, it's no coincidence that Arthur Larry Rogers in trouble all of a sudden, and he put Larry Rogers in, or why David Miller don't want to run, or why Reverend Meeks gave up, or why everybody let me step back. You know, Reverend Meeks is one step away from being governor. You ain't heard from that guy no more. Remember that? He almost was governor. Remember that?
Yeah, well, not only that, but see, I don't like the idea of candidates misrepresenting their office or their power. Because, see, it was a disservice for him to even entertain that he was going to run for governor, didn't do it. In the same way, when he entertained that he was going to run for mayor and didn't do it. So if there is even the congregation, that is a disservice to his congregation and a disservice to a possibly happen, he should have went all the way. But it throws our potential organization base off when leaders of that caliber throw wolf tickets. And when you throw wolf tickets, that delusion the voters on what's real and what's not real. So it definitely was a disservice.
But you see, and you are a student of the political game here in Chicago, and this game has been ran on us since we got rid of David Orr as mayor. Now, what I mean is this. The fraction has been, we're going to play on the motions of African Americans. And we can never beat Daley because every congressman want to run against him. We want to vote for Danny Davis, Bobby Rush want to run. You want to vote for Bobby Rush, Meeks want to run. You want to vote for this guy, that guy want to run. And everybody know that you're in my way, and we're all from the same party, but we don't want to let a black man to be mayor. Meeks is about to run for governor. He has the Jesse Jackson machine behind him, and all the emotions of everybody black. Quote, unquote, cut a deal, Robert Gorevich, I stepped down, what have you, just show how powerful I am. But yet he's quiet now. He's not even praying.
Right.
He's not even praying for his friend. Make sure his health is all fine. He's not even saying that as a man of the cloth. Or Dr.
Mm-hmm.
David Miller. Or Robin
mm-hmm.
Kelly. Toyota.
Right.
Second District is full of the Jesse Jackson Klan. I mean, you're
mm-hmm.
not getting nobody. Or the Tony Pratt-Winkles of the world. Or
mm-hmm.
the Pat Dowds of the world. Let's go on and on. Let's look at everybody placed in office. And then
mm-hmm.
the Anita Alvarez of the world.
Well, you know, the political potential political dynasty of black empowerment here in Chicago, we don't know, I don't know exactly when it's going to turn. But I know that there are, how can I say, seeds that are penetrating our political might. I mean, I can just go back to the days of Lou Palmer, who was basically our godfather of our progressive black candidates and elected officials. And it seems though, since Lou Palmer has passed, there hasn't been a real consistency in our progressive black political agenda. Regardless of who was in office, whether it was Daley in office or Jane Burton in office or Balancic in office, there was that leadership that followed Lou Palmer that we trust. Regardless
but do you know what happened to that leadership?
Agree with him.
Do you know what happened to that leadership?
It was burnt off.
Who cut it
off?
Who cut it off? Jesse Jackson Jr. destroyed the Shaw brothers. Ooh, wasn't it? They're from that Palmer generation. The Tillmans. Let's go to the second ward. The second ward, which was the first black ward in the city of Chicago, and Jesse comes out and said, does it not matter if blacks and whites running? See, people should pay attention to that when he got rid of the historical black second district, which took a
Correct.
Lot of power.
Right. Yeah.
Down.
Well, in fact, it's not even black no more. You know, I think it's barely 49% black, if that.
Man,
you know,
is it that?
And
now, if you look at your student history, if you look at how the government does it, when blacks move on power, then that power must be dismantled. And what we have now is the result of an individual who was given power was given to Jesse by the people. They made him. Listen, now the funny part about it, how do you feel about running behind a crazy man? How everybody feel about now they ran behind a crazy man all the time? You know that he's just playing around. You know, he was never serious. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the whole black Chicago has fell behind a madman. Now, no one wants to admit that because they're ashamed to say that. That's the funny part. They don't want to say that. But that's
I've been working on this parity legislation for 2 years. It is based on the same concept that Alderman Tillman had regarding the 70-30 plan. And
right.
When I ran for alderman in 2009 or 2010, knowing that I wasn't going to win, but in the midst of me running, we came up with the parity legislation from the Black Wall Street agenda. And that what that called for were racial parity in each of the black wards. Now, and that parity means that if the 42nd ward is majority white, then the automatic menu of $1.2 million should go to majority white folks. But if the 2nd ward, 3rd ward, 5th ward, 7th, 8th, 9th are all majority black, then it should be majority blacks working on that minority, on that parity on that parity contracts. During that election, I went to Rahm Emanuel, and in going to him, I asked him what he was for this parity legislation. He said, yes, I had 9 aldermen agree to it. I had Alderman Latasha Thomas agree to it. And in the midst of agreeing to it, as I was a candidate and being a newspaper publisher, and they was candidates, they agreed to it. 2 years later, everybody's backing off of it. Now, understanding that the automatic menu is where the alderman says what's going to happen in their particular ward, but they don't decide on who's going to do the work. That goes in line with the agenda of the Black Wall Street. And even as we looked at the near west side and the near south side of Chicago has actually turned into a white Wall Street district because of 175,000 increased population of white folks on the near south side and the near west side. What we're calling for.
Did we lose him?
Yep.
Oh, we lost him. Okay. Let me give, I'm going to bring, let me play some Ed Brooks for y'all for a second. This is the first black senator of Reconstruction.
First of all, a work ethic. I'm a strong believer in the work ethic. I like to tell them what a teacher told me, that there are no shortcuts to glory. And when I use glory, I don't mean the frills and the ruffles. There's no shortcut to success, whatever that success may be. I'd like to reiterate what I was taught in early on. And I got that not just from my mother, but my grandmother, who used to say, remember your place now. And that disturbed me. And I knew what she was saying and why she was saying it. She was saying it to protect me also. And that's why I said, particularly the young black children, your place is anywhere you want it to be. It's left up to you. You make that decision. To young politicians, I want to make a plea for elective office. Seek power. There's nothing wrong with power if it's used wisely and used rightly. Power is essential. Power is what gets things going. And it can be used for good as well as for evil. Some people think of power, the powerful person as being evil. I think the powerful person as being good.
Yeah, got Ron Carter back on. That's Senator Ed Brooks. He was the first popularly elected voted senator, state of Massachusetts, since Reconstruction. Seek power. Don't be scared of power. I'm sorry you got cut off. What were you saying, my friend?
I believe that economics can, once we have the base of our economics in our community, it can drive the politicians right. One thing I have heard from a lot of politicians is that the black community do not fund their campaigns. So they are making deals with people that are funding their campaigns. I think that that's a bad excuse. But I also know that
it's a bad excuse. Let me tell you something, Ron. Let me tell you why it's a bad excuse. Because when I ran for Water Reclamation Commission, I only spent, now that's for the county. I ran for the county, Cook County, big county. I only spent $5,000. That's like mostly transportation and flyers. And I got a quarter million votes. You see, people look at the game for the money and not realizing if you believe what you say, the next man will believe what they say. Because I felt this way. If I can convince one person, if I walk in the street and convince one person to come with me, I ain't got a dime in my pocket. And I did find one person. So I can't pay you. But I got this idea. I'm running as a Republican. I'm about to change Chicago. Now, we're about to be ridiculed. They're going to laugh at us. We'll be the biggest times in the world. But in the end, we're about to change Chicago because Chicago has been ran by a crazy black man, and everybody followed this crazy man. And that's why I went on this Jesse Jackson bashing tip, because I knew the boy was crazy. I grew up with the cat. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that he has single-handedly, reason why you're saying what you need, Ron, because there's no Tillman down in City Hall to make sure blacks get their contracts. There's no politicians that are in there. And here in Chicago, in Crook County, the Democrats got a plan, and they're not going to allow. They're not going to allow no more Tillmans in the Democratic Party to make no 70-30, homie.
Well, then I would like to vouch in what you stated, and I have no problems with going on record with this, because Alderman, the chairman of the Black Caucus, Howard Brookins, I questioned him on this parity legislation, and I questioned him in public that the alderman is just sitting on their butts and not addressing it. He came, I caught him in the hallway and readdressed his position, and he told me directly, the mayor do not want it. And so when he told me that the mayor does not want it, I told him that the mayor told me that he supports it. So if the mayor said he don't want it, then he needs to come back to the community and put that on notice to the community what the mayor said he don't want, so that we can be able to back you to back us. But I do believe that a lot of times, even, you know, I mean, I don't want to, I'm just a newspaper man. I put it to you like it is. Is sure. That even when Alderman Dow had Rahm Emanuel to be the chairman of her campaign, or one of her campaign fundraisers, that gave me the single that she was not going to stay strong. And I've known her for a long time. And but I believe that if we can control the economics in our community independently with our black businesses, no different than Chinatown, Greek town, Korean town, Polish town,
who that's like a Tillman plan. That's not like a Tillman plan,
correct,
and I think we know
correct
what a Tillman sounds like. And the
right
fact of the matter is, the Democratic Party is not going to let it happen. See, Negroes,
well,
they got Negroes locked, stocked, and barreled.
Well, we already did it, though. It's not about them not letting it happen. Because
listen, what I'm saying is this.
We already have claimed the
so
black
wall
districts in Chicago. We already
alderman
did.
If you got an alderman saying, now, here go Mr. Brookins, he's going to come, he's going to pretty soon he's going to come down to everybody blacks that want to be Cook County attorney again, but yet he's going to say, I ain't got the balls enough to push an agenda through. I mean, what, see, the point of the matter is, the funny part about it is, since we're in one party rule, that's the party plan. Ain't no outsiders going to come in and they're going to make it happen because that's the party plan. Jesse has got rid of all those people who are independent, quote-unquote, Democrats that went on their own will of the people. Now all you got is, this how you gonna get elected? You better stay lock, stock, and barrel, or you ain't getting not one dime. We're back. You should know how machine politics look. This is machine politics right here in full effect. That's why we got these high meetings. That's why our taxes so high. I mean, you can. That's why I'm Republican.
Well,
you
what
cannot,
we have done, what we have done for the South suburbs, and we understand that whoever get elected in the second congressional district, that means that the South suburbs have approximately about 75% of the influence in the votes for the second congressional district.
That election is only good for they get elected in April. They take office in May. Then in November, the petition's all over again. I mean, you're not gonna be with Congress in not even 15 months. You know, so you can't even legislate. You see the funny
correct
part about it? The funny part about it, you're gonna go over you're running to run again. You know what I mean? I mean, so when everybody gonna be, see, that's, I'm laughing at them already. They're gonna be like, we did it. The game just started. You know, low voter turnout, ain't no interest, it's not going to be no big numbers.
Jimmy, as we complain about our elected officials, one thing that I don't like is that when people say, well, we're going to vote them out of office, voting somebody out of office is too long. What we need to do is to put in a foundation of what we need to be about. And
yeah,
that's why we are pushing the Black Wall Street agenda, and that is to control the economics in our community. So we have 15 Black Wall Street districts in Chicago, and we had a summit this past Saturday. And the South Suburbs was well abreast and have formed a Black Wall Street South Suburban. And we have targeted Robbins, Illinois, as a Black Wall Street city. So
that
in mind, the idea is that regardless of the elected officials, regardless of the candidates, if they don't have this mandate for the economic development of our community, then they're no good. But even if they're not no good, we still have to control those economics of our community, regardless of the influence of other people have already have a secure base, but there's still many opportunities for us to take advantage of. There's a brother in Robbins that's trying to put up a grocery store. We're putting our energies to make that happen. There's a brother trying to put up a banquet facility on 75th Street. There's a brother that bought this building on 69th and Emerald. There's a brother that's want to open up a restaurant on 79th and Morgan. So our energies are to develop these businesses so that we can have that financial independent base where we don't have to depend on elected officials. The official Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, of 1881 to 1921, those Black folks controlled the economics of their community and did not have one elected official. Now, I know that we are hyped on Barack Obama, but even with Barack Obama, he just gave us, whatever his politics may be, he already gave us a signal. During his inauguration, he honored the original, not the original, the descendants of Black Wall Street of what happened in 1921. So for him to do that, now it's up to us to kind of carry on that message. It may have been an indirect message. It may have been a direct message. I know
there's some callers
in my
out
position.
Here there will be some callers in here for you.
Okay.
I got a couple of minutes left on the spot. Let me ask. Let me bring my man Pianki in. I know. You got any? I got a couple of minutes. Pianki from Kansas City. You got anything? Want to ask my man, Mr. Ron Carter, St. Louis. Yeah. Pianki.
How you doing, sir?
Yeah, I got my man Ron Carter on. I thought you might. You should be listening in. I was wondering if you had any questions for my man. Lost Pianki right there. Yeah. Yo, Coop. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yo, Detroit.
Yeah. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, my mute was off. Now, you got any questions for my man from Black Wall Street, Professor Miller?
No, I'm just listening now. I'm getting ready to.
I want to make sure I get everybody from Detroit. I'm going to make sure I get everybody says, you know, a question they ask for, I'll pull off. What about you, DC Dana? Got any question you want to ask my man for bring it back on?
Well, you know, it's definitely nice to hear someone that has so much knowledge, but part of the problem is that we as a people have this crabs in a barrel mentality. And I don't think that it has anything to do with one person trying to pull us down. It's that a lot of us feel that if we're not on top, then, you know what I mean, we all can't be on top. So what do you do, and how do you change that? Because
well,
that is honestly
that, yeah.
What is hurting us more than anything.
Well, one thing I do believe that we have to be very cautious of as we move forward is that we are in America. America is based on capitalism. And capitalism is based on exactly what that word means. Cap on somebody. You got to cap on somebody in order to be a part of America, which is capitalism. So even though, and just taking it from other nationalities, even if we, and I'm going to use the example for Arabs in our community, they are practicing what America is all about, but they have an economic engine to do that. We cap on each other as far as the barrel is concerned, but we're at the bottom of that barrel when other people are on layers on top of us. Capitalism, Americanism, says that you must cap on people in order to get ahead. We are doing that no different than other people are doing it. But we still have to have a strategy no different than when you have an Arab business is on one corner and then there's another Arab business is right across the street from it. They are using capitalism. What we have to do is to be able to do the same thing. Now, I understand that you may be talking about on an individual level, but speaking on a business level, if we can be able to cap on each other in a respectful way, the same way the Arabs does it when they have a grocery store on every block in our community, they are competing with each other. We can be competing with each other as well, but we have to compete for the good of our community collectively. That is the nature of Black Wall Street. We got business people that when we had this summit this past Saturday, there were businesses. There was Mr. Armstrong that had a banquet facility, and there was Dan that had a banquet facility. They both are sitting at the table in the name of capitalism to make a profit, but they still sit at the same table in order to do the good for the community. Our individualism is still no different from, use the term of gangbangers. They are capping on each other, but we don't have that luxury in order to do it like other people do it.
Yeah, that is true. I got my man Ron Carter from Black Wall Street. Listen, Mr. Ron Carter, I'm about to have you again on my show so we can chop it up. And then you can come back and tell us how many jobs that your boy Bobby Russ got on that little Amtrak.
Why are you going to pick on me and talk about Bobby Russ?
The Amtrak project, you know what I'm saying? I mean, let's keep 100. And let's make sure that let's make sure that the Black Soul Slate do Slate's great candidates, not because they drop some money down, because, you know, it should be about the people, not selling people out like that. But I got Black Wall Street. And I'm going to have them on again. Ms. Perdue, I need more commercials. I thank you very kindly because y'all did give me a chance to spit my Republican views. And y'all are the reason why the Underground Radio Network is still viable. And I appreciate y'all being on. I'd like to thank my guy, Professor Miller from Detroit. Always from St. Louis, my man Bianchi checking in. That dude, Desert Storm from Cleveland. My girl Dana from D.C., Sonya Perdue. And the ever-loving Mr. Ron Carter. I'm trying to call you again. Probably do it once a week with you. And, you know, we can chop it up, see what's going on in Chicago politics. Like I said, every night, and good night. May your God be with you.
Tiny car, dignity and courage were the measure of a man. Not the drugs he needs to hide the scars. Does your preacher pray? Does your president have soul? Have you heard a real good ethnic joke today? Mama took her seat and daddy ran away. But you must have lose control.
Let's go to class.
I got some grass. The kids are wild. We just can't tame them.
Do we have
set them on our institutions.
but what the hell? They're too young to feel pain.
Oh, but I believe that love can save tomorrow.
Ooh, I believe the truth can make us free.
Someone tried to say it, and we nailed him to a cross. I guess it's still the way it used to be.
Good night, Dana.
Good night, Jimmy. Talk to you soon.